Hello everybody and welcome back to our third day. And today we will be speaking about security. Security in the cloud. Is the cloud secure? Well, it is, and we'll speak how do we get to that conclusion? What do you say?
Well, that's a good one. And you know, Mario, the problem I've always had with security is nobody wants to do it right. They all wish it's just this annoying thing, and they all just kind of wish it would go away. And they don't want to have to think about it. They think that security is always getting in the way of trying to do interesting things. And they just wish they didn't have to deal with it.
But, you know, on the other hand, when we speak about the cloud, I'm putting my data somewhere. It's not my data anymore. I'm putting it on other people's data centers. Is it secure now? Am I leaving my data? I don't know where it is. What should I do with my data now? Is it secure? Is it not secure? This is a question that I'm being asked for many, many customers. And today we would like to speak about security in the cloud. Is it really secure? Is it okay to take your data, to take your apps, and put it somewhere in the cloud? So,
I will be curious to see.
We will speak today about security in the cloud. We will speak about role-based identity. We will speak about cloud-based, claim-based identity. We will speak about Windows Identity Framework. We will speak about access control service. And we will speak about shared access signatures. All this will cover the security frame of Windows Azure. So, what is security? How do we secure an app? Well, security is an interesting issue because it's kind of holistic. You have to secure the whole thing. And if you forget to secure one aspect of your app, one aspect of your data, it's as if you didn't secure it all. If there is a breach somewhere, it's a breach. It doesn't really matter on what layer you did not secure it properly. If it's not secured properly there, nothing. There's no value to security whatsoever.
You're saying you're just as dead, right? Doesn't you're matter whether this one gets you or that one gets you, you're just as dead.
Exactly. So we need to look at security in layers. What does security mean? So the first thing we need is physical security. We need someone to protect our database physically, someone who will protect that nobody can actually enter physically to the data center and get access, physical access to the server.
So I can't walk into the room and kind of unscrew the hard drive and snap it out and snap in my hard drive instead?
Of course, you should not be able to access the data center, change configuration files, change the software, change the data, etc. After that, you have the OS or the DB security, OS hardening. The OS should be in the best state possible with the best security patches, the best patch at all. And looking at the database, the same thing applies here. You have to have the best database configured correctly, etc. Now when you have an OS, an operating system, which is hardened, which is configured correctly, and you have the same for the database, then you would have network security. You would have firewalls. You would have auditing on the network. You would have the network configuration. So no one would be able to sniff your network, to look at the data going out there, to do third parties attacks, etc., etc. All those famous network attacks. Now, let's say you have your network configured correctly, you have all the infrastructure, you have all the firewalls all configured correctly. Now you would have the application security. The application itself has to take into consideration security aspects. For instance, the application does its business. Can I harm the business process? Can I take advantage of the business process and to do things that you're not allowed to do, etc., etc.? Only application can deal with the application aspects of the app. And then you would have human security. Well, it happens that humans, they deal with your app. They use the app. Well, humans can do all sorts of stuff with data. Can they tell the data to their friends? Can they speak the data? Can they communicate the data? Can they use the data in a harmful way?
They can write their passwords on Post-it notes and stick it to their monitors.
You know, they can print the data. They can print some data they can see from the. They can screen capture the data and then give it to someone. So who can see what data? How do humans treat the data that they are exposed to when using the app? Is a critical security aspect. So when you want to secure your app, you have to take into consideration all these layers. You have to physically protect your servers. You have to harden your OS. You have to configure your network correctly and use firewalls appropriately. You have to design your application with application security, and the application has to take security into consideration. And you have to manage your employees, the human side of using the application correctly, so the data will not be shown to inappropriate employees and people. So,
you know, we've got a good point here from a user named Tom. He says the USB, stick that you stick in is a real threat for human vectors. I know I have some clients that are in rather high security situations. They've actually sealed them up with glue. They said, sorry, this just isn't going to happen on this laptop, and they sealed them up with glue.
Well, you don't have to do such a violent act.
Well, these guys did.
You can configure the OS to accept very specific USB sticks. So only authorized USB sticks can be used, and non-authorized USB sticks, general USB sticks, just are useless. Again, this is part of the OS configuration. But this is a good point, of course. There are organizations that will not allow you to bring in a USB to the office. Anyway, so looking at the data centers that Microsoft provides us with, we can surely say that the Microsoft data center are secure. If we're looking at our own data center and on our own physical security, how many guards do we have them? What aspects of physical security do we implement? And we compare that to this huge data center that Microsoft provides us with. And we're comparing with the security steps and security aspects, physical security aspects that are implemented on the data centers of Microsoft. We can surely say with a lot of confidence that the Microsoft data center physically are secured. I heard a legend that said that most of the people wandering around the Microsoft data centers carry guns and not laptops. I don't know if this is true, but this is just a legend to bring the idea that the Microsoft data center physically, they are secure.
When an Israeli tells me that, I tend to listen. You know what I mean?
And when we understand that, first of all, our data is kept in a bank, in a huge vault, somewhere that we can trust that it is physically secure, then we can go over the other aspects of application security, and we can see that there was a lot of thought and design when designing the Azure cloud to make it as secure as possible. So if we look at our code at the center, at the actual app, so the code is running in a partial trust as much as possible. So the actual code cannot do much. And then you're running in a Windows account that cannot do much as well concerning its surrounding. And then you're running in a VM. So a VM is a separation unit. You cannot access other VM next to you. Now, the hypervisor, the engine that runs the VM was specially customized. So lots of APIs and commands were disabled just to make sure that your VM would never be able to access other VM and to harm them. And then, looking at the separation of the VM and the networking of the VM, we can see several virtual IP networks running inside the data center. So if you want to access the VM from the outside world, Oh, well, you have to overcome and to bypass several several layers of virtualization, network virtualization, and practically speaking, this is kind of impossible. So looking at all those rings, one on the other, it's like the onion model of security, one ring inside the other, we can fairly say that the Microsoft data center is secure concerning a network and OS.
You know, I might just qualify that and say, you know, it's about, you know, is secure, is not secure. Some of those this sort of absolute proclamations, if something is safe, something is not safe. You know, when you say something's safe, you mean the risk is small enough that you're willing to tolerate it. And when you say something is not safe, well, the risk is large and you're not willing to tolerate it. I guess I would say that, you know, it's about the safest thing you're going to find. And it's safer than you could do yourself.
I would say that if we look at the definition of security, if you look at the definition in the Cambridge Dictionary of security, security is the ability to protect against any danger or threat. And the word any, is difficult here because what is any? What is the future attack? We don't know it. But if we'll take it to practical use, we would say that security is the ability to protect yourself against any reasonable, predictable danger or threat. And if we're looking here at the danger or threat we take into consideration, we can fairly say that all the steps that are being taken in the Microsoft data center makes it as secure as possible, and I might say that with great confidence, I would say, more secure that I would be able to implement
that's
myself.
That's probably right, and it's the same thing, because they can hire the best security guys. They have enough units to spread that cost over. And
so looking at those layers again, I can say that physically, probably, I'm quite sure, and I'm quite confident to say that physically, my app is better secure on the Microsoft data center than it would be on my data center, on premise.
That is probably right.
And the same I can say on the OS and DB, because they patch the OS all the time, and they have the latest release, and they know exactly what happens there. So their OS is better patched and better handled than my OS at home. So again, OS-wise, I would say that the application is better secure on the Microsoft data center than at my data center back home.
They learned from the time they got hit by the slammer worm, right?
And the same goes for the network. Because of those virtualization, the number of virtual networks that you have to pass to get to the VM, I can say that the application is better secure on the Microsoft data center than it would be on mine. Now we get to the application side. So now we are on the application security side of the app, and here it's my responsibility, because this is platform as a service. So I provide the application to Microsoft to host for me. So I have to write the application. So I have to do all the application security. And for that, I have to understand application security, which we'll speak in a minute. So application security, it's equal on the cloud than it would be on-premise, because on both combinations, both alternatives, I have to do application security, and I will. And concerning human security, the same goes here, because my employees would work against the application. My employees would see data, would communicate data, would use data as human beings. And again, there's no difference if the application is hosted in the cloud or it is hosted on-prem. The same condition applies here. So if we look, we try to compare security in the cloud against security on-prem, the first three layers are better in the cloud. The second top layer are us to deal with, and that's the same situation. So looking at the overall picture, I get a better deal when I use the cloud.
Probably right.
So what is application security? What do I have to deal with? And sometimes...
Oh, I was hoping you were going to have that picture.
Sometimes it's a new thing because I used to take an on-prem application, which was not web application at all, and then I bring it to the cloud, and by this, I make it a web application. This is now a new web application. And web application is the most general case of application security, and I have to deal with several aspects. And I have to deal with several topics of security, and this is application security. So the first thing I have to do is input validation. Any input that would be entered to my app has to be validated. Now, from whom? So anything that I do not trust, I have to validate. If the user enters information to my app, the user is a classical example of something I don't trust. I don't trust my user,
with
all due respect. So I have to validate any information coming from the user, but any other source, maybe a web service or something which is not under my control, and it provides information to my app, again, I have to validate that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very simple step to do, but if I do that, I mitigate a large percentage of attacks and threats, current attacks and future attacks as well. If we look at the statistics of attacks, most of them, a very large percentage, can be mitigated only with input validation. And then I have to deal with authentication and authorization, and we will speak about identity in a minute.
By the way, if anybody has found that Roadrunner cartoon that I asked for yesterday about input validation, I would sure love to see it. An autographed copy of Why Software Sucks. Autographed or undamaged, take your pick.
Okay.
Whoever managed to send me that.
Okay. The next topic would be configuration management. And here it is. It is vital. We spoke about Azure Storage. You had a beautiful talk about Azure Storage.
Oh, and I'll be doing a demonstration. This afternoon I'll be doing that table code demonstration that we didn't get time for.
Oh, so fantastic.
Good.
And when you connect, you created a connection to Azure Storage, you used a connection string, remember?
I did.
Now, in your demo, it was just to the local fabric here,
yes.
The local emulator, but... In real life, you would create a connection string to the Azure storage, to the actual cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you put in this connection string?
Gosh, user equals SA, password equals blank.
Oh, no, you would put your username and password.
Okay.
So this is sensitive information, sits there in your configuration file, which means that your configuration file holds sensitive information that must be protected. And this goes... the same goes for a connection string to SQL Azure, to local database, etc., etc. There is more and more information written in configuration if we look at modern software, and it means that this configuration file is getting more and more and more sensitive, and it needs protection. What is sensitive data? What should I protect? What should I encrypt? I remember I gave a talk in a very large company in Israel a few years ago, and I taught how to encrypt using crypto API.
Yeah, you know, and did you find that wasn't really the problem?
And the thing is that a guy came to me and said, thank you very much. I know how to encrypt, I know to use crypto API, but I do not know what to encrypt.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody told me what is sensitive and what is not. What should I handle? What should I not handle? And as a developer, I cannot see the whole picture, so I do not really know what should I encrypt. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
He was right. So it's very important to have a global design and to understand the whole picture so you would understand what is sensitive data, what to encrypt, how to handle session. How to handle cryptography, how to do cryptography, which algorithm to use, parameters manipulation that flow between pages, exception handling. Now, you wouldn't want your user to see the whole exception with all the details, because the exception includes intimate information about your app. And the average user does not want to see that information about the app. He doesn't understand that. but the average hacker would love to see that information. So that's a lose-lose situation if you do not handle exception properly, because intimate information about your app would flow out there. Auditing and logging is critical and important, because using auditing and logging, you can understand that you are in a situation of an attack. You have to understand normality and abnormality. When everything goes well, when everything is not going very well. So to understand abnormality and normality, to be able to distinguish between the two, you have to log normal stuff and to log abnormal stuff. You should log things which are normal. Not only exceptions should be logged. It's very common to see that only exceptions are being logged. But when there's no exception, I do not know that something is going wrong. And sometimes the business side of the app does not really throw an exception, but something is going wrong here. Let's say a user tries to come in, and he gives you the wrong username and password, and then the user account is blocked. Okay. Well, I might expect that 3 users in an hour would actually be blocked, because username and passwords are wrong username and passwords are being entered. But if I see that 3,000 users are being blocked, well, there's no exception here, but something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Something mm-hmm. is wrong. Maybe I am under attack. Somebody is trying just to block all my users. Mm-hmm. Things have happened.
Distributed denial of service attack.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So auditing and logging would help you to show that and to understand that you're under attack. All these should be handled by your app. This is application security.
Speaking of app security, I have a question here from a viewer named Emilio. He's asking, can I encrypt the configuration sections in the config file just the way I do a normal ASP.NET 2.0?
It's not the same thing, because it's not system.configuration, mm-hmm. but yes, you can and you should encrypt those. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of application security, we spoke about several issues, and two most popular issues are authentication and authorization. Mm-hmm. And when we speak about authentication and authorization, we speak about identity. What is identity?
I don't know. What's identity with you?
What's identity? What is identity? What do we deal with here? So
identity is who you are.
Who I am.
Yes.
Well, identity is a very simple thing.
It's a very simple thing to state, but it's really hard to actually get your hands on when you start to... Sort of like trying to stuff smoke into a bottle, isn't it?
You know, it's no more than a collection of information mm-hmm. about an entity. That's it. That's your identity. So it can be your name. Mm-hmm. It can be your age. It can be your ID number. It can be your employee ID. It can be your biometrics. It could be your photograph. And by the way, you have different identities. For your work as an employee, that's your one identity. But at home, as a father, you have another identity. It's a different set of information.
My wife keeps reminding me of that one, actually.
So if we look at our lives, we use this set of information in different locations in our lives because we have different identities. And people treat us in different ways, in different patterns, because we have different identities. But it's all, you know, it's the same entity. It's me. But I use different set of information to describe myself relevant to the proper situation. So identity is no more than information. Now, someone has to handle that information. Someone has to handle this identity. And currently we can see 2 major strategic ways to do so. There is role-based identity, and there is claim-based identity. Role-based identity is more of the traditional way of handling an identity. Well, I give my credentials, okay? And then you take these credentials and you map it to an identity. But the identity is simply mapping to a certain type of role. I am a member in one or more roles. That's it. And then you ask, oh, are you an administrator? So if you are an administrator, I will allow you to do this and that. So what the application actually does, it checks the roles you're a member in. And if you are a member of the right role, then you are allowed to do something. So this is authorization. Mm-hmm. Authentication gives only the username, no more than that. Mm-hmm. And then authorization is based on the membership of this particular identity, this username, that's a little piece of information in a specific role.
So would you say that authentication is finding out who you are and how do I really know that you are that person?
Exactly.
And the end result of authentication is an identity, which is who you are.
Yeah, but
and then authorization is, now that I know who you are, are you allowed to do this thing or that thing?
Exactly.
Do I have them correctly?
Exactly.
Okay, good.
But with role-based identity, mm-hmm. the most important thing is the role.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now that I know who you are, I know that you're a member of the role doctors and not a member of the role nurses.
Exactly.
Or the other way around.
But when looking at the identity itself, all you have is your name.
Yes.
All you have is your name. Now, this is the traditional way to handle identities, and you have many types of application who does that. That's the traditional way, as we said. And if the application needs some other types of information about you, so I will take that username, and then I have to go to the identity provider, let's say Active Directory. Active Directory has a database with lots of information about yourself. And then I would say, hey, give me information about Mr. Platt. Who he is? Who he works for? What's his age? What books he published?
Where the hell did they get that information
from? Well, that's written in your AD.
Oh, okay.
It happens to be. It's written there. Or in other databases, or in any other identity provider that knows more information about you. So you have the process of authentication. You authenticate. I know who you are. I authorize you. But if I need something else, I have to go again to another database and fetch information about you, which is kind of complex. Now, if we want to implement role-based identity in the cloud, we can do so using ASP.NET membership or using a domain join. With Azure Connect, we can domain join an Azure application running out there on the cloud on a VM on the Microsoft data center to your on-premise AD at home. We can domain join. This means that role-based security, Windows role-based security, which we all love and use all the time, this is one of the traditional ways to do identity, we can still do that, as if we were inside the corporate network. Mm-hmm. Now, if we want to do ASP.NET membership, and that's a very simple yet effective identity provider, we can still do that, and we'll see that in a minute.
I wrote one of those not that long ago. They're not that hard to do.
Okay. So, we spoke about membership provider.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Please. That would be great.
So, let's go and share my desktop. we have here a very simple app. And what this app does, I have a simple page, which we'll see in a minute. And then I have a restricted page. Mm-hmm. And in the this restricted page, there is some information which is restricted. As you can see here, you can have a hint about what's restricted there.
Okay.
Nuclear reactor. Uh-huh. It looks like restricted to me.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so I don't want my users, every user, to be able to access this restricted area. So, using ASP.NET, I say that only authenticated users can access here.
Sure.
All right. But I need to authenticate against something. ASP.NET provides me with a very simple yet powerful tool called Membership Provider.
I remember those.
And Membership Provider is based on a database that I can deploy at home my on-prem database. And this database looks something like this. So let's connect to my database. Here it is. And as you can see, this is a database, ASP.NET DB. I can create a separate database just for membership provider and ASP.NET in general, or I can put the schema of this database in my own database. I can merge the two if that's convenient for me. And inside this database, I have a few tables, the membership table, the user table, the user in roles tables, the roles table. So all these actually implement together the model of role-based identity.
Okay.
Okay. Now, working against this is very simple. All I have to do is to direct ASP.NET to work against this database. So, going back here, I have this local SQL server. That's the name of the connection string that I will be using. All That's right. a default connection connection name. And as you can see here, I am working against the local database, okay? What do you say? Should we run?
No, don't run.
Don't run, okay?
Yeah, go ahead and run.
Okay.
There's nothing like a running sample.
Okay.
Jerry Purnell, the science fiction author, coined what he calls Purnell's Law. You can never have too many examples.
You know
right.
what? You know what? Let's wait. Let's wait.
Wait. Okay.
So it's pretty simple here because I'm running against the local server. There's nothing Azure around
okay.
this.
You're going to Azure this?
I want to Azure this.
Okay, Azure it.
I want to take the membership database to Azure.
Okay.
Okay?
Go for it.
So what I have to do is exactly what we've done yesterday. All right. Go to the portal. I go to my databases. And here I created the same ASP.NET DB. Okay? So I have the same tables, the same set of information. I just copied the database as is to SQL Azure. Here it is. You see? The same membership, roles, user in roles. The way I did that was very simple. I created a script. I sanitized the script. Here, let's go SQL. I'm looking, where did I put that? Security, membership. Here it is. ASP.NET DB script for SQL Azure. And I did that using the tool I showed yesterday. So I just created the script. I ran the script against SQL Azure. And that's it. Here I have the database right online.
Cool.
Now, what I have to do is to change the connection string. Instead of working against the local database, I just have to work against the SQL Azure database. So I'll close this. Remember, that's my server name, okay? That's a fully qualified name. That's my administrator name. So let's go to the app. And instead of working with the local, I would work with the Azure one. Here it is, but that's my network, that's my server, that's my name, that's my server. So that's a connection string, as we've seen yesterday, to SQL Azure. Okay, that's right. Let's run. The application is running on the local machine. I'm packaging the deployment. I'm running the deployment. I want to go to the restricted page. Let's create a user. What do you say? Dave.
Oh, boy. Do I need to be a user?
Platts. And your password would be?
Don't tell me.
I'll invent a password for you. And your, I'll invent Dave at dave.com. So I created a user, and you are Dave Platt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I typed in correctly. No. Here it is. And here.
Oh.
You can see the restricted page.
Nuclear power plant? Yeah. Steam coming out?
So what we did here, we did membership provider against SQL Azure.
Okay.
And that's very nice because I can take my existing ASP.NET application and it's working against the local store.
Right.
I can just move the local store to SQL Azure and I'm happy to go. As simple as that. Okay, so let's go back to the deck. So this was role-based identity.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll speak about claim-based identity.
Okay.
Now with claim-based identity, we have something else. We have something called a token. And a token is a collection of claims. We said that identity is a set of information, right? So we'll package the whole set of information, the whole thing, we'll package it into a token. And each piece of information would be a claim. So identity, the full identity or the full set of information we need to represent that identity is given to us inside a claim. And a token. Token is a collection of claims. Now, what the application does now, it takes that token, it looks at the claims, and then it can authenticate and authorize the application to do whatever. So if there is a claim that allows you to do this and that, well, you can do it. If there's no claim that I'm looking for to allow you, to authorize you to do a certain action, you won't be able to do so. But now I'm very happy as an application because I do not have to do anything to handle that identity. Everything is brought ready for me. I have it. I have it already there. All I have to do is just open the token, and there I have all the information I need. I do not have to go to another identity provider or to another database or whatever to get information about my user because it's all there, just ready. I can have applicative information, information which was just made for me, for my application, just there in the token, ready for me to use. So I can implement more diverse policies, and I have much more freedom to handle my identities in a very delicate way, in a very precise way, and to give any specific identity the exact authorization that he's allowed or should have. So this is a more advanced way to handle identity. So here we can see a token, and the token holds a certain type of claims: the name, the group, the age, the email, and of course it is all signed. So I, as an application, would be absolutely convinced that I got this token from the one who had to issue that token. And the one who had to issue that token is called STS, Security Token Service. This is a service that is responsible to issue those tokens. And I trust that service. I trust that this STS is the real one. It will work with the identity provider. It will get all the information I need for that identity. It will package it in a token. It will encrypt that token. It will send me the token. I will decrypt that token. I will find out the signature is okay. I will validate the signature. So I'm positively sure that this token got from the right place. I will take the information and use it.
Here's an interesting question. They say, what is the difference between identity and a token? Sounds like identity is more of an abstract concept, and a token is a specific concrete thing proving one's identity. Do I understand that correctly?
That is true. A token is no more than a bag. It's a bag, or it's a bin, or it's a placeholder to put information, and the information is identity, because identity is a collection of information, as we defined earlier. So we have an STS, which creates token. We have an identity provider, which tells the STS what information to put in that token. And then I get the token, and everything is ready for me. Now, let's say I have an application, okay? And I want only users from age 25 onwards to be able to use that application because, I know, I need a certain type of maturity from those, okay? I know, I speak about news, and I don't want young kids to see that.
Or whatever. Or you sell beer. And you want to make sure that anybody who comes in is of legal age.
Whatever. So I don't need to know your name.
No.
I don't need to know your group. No. I even don't care about your email. But the age is very important for me. So I can ask the STS, please wrap me up just the information. That is age information. That's all I need. And if you're over 25, I'll be happy to sell you beer or let you in my site. So, we have an STS who works with the identity provider, and the STS and the application trust each other, which is done using cryptography, using exchange of X509 certificates. So my client goes to the application and says, please give me service. The application says, hey, wait a minute, I need a token. Go to the STS, and I will tell you which STS to go to, and ask the STS to provide you with a token. The STS will authenticate you, of course, using its credentials or whatever, and it will issue a token with the relevant information for the app to you. You take that token, and now you provide that token to the application, and the application will open that user or token, will decrypt it, will use the claim, and we're happy to go. This is how it goes. So, it happens to be that we have to create an STS. We have to reference that STS. We have to create all the graph that we have just seen in the last slide. And the question is, how do we do that?
Well, we sit down and write code, of course, don't we?
So, it's a complicated task, is it?
Very complicated.
Do you like complicated stuff?
Not usually. Not if I
have
to do
I don't really
them.
Like to do complicated stuff. So, fortunately, Microsoft provides us with the Windows Identity Framework. I love that. I really do.
WIF.
I did claim-based identity for several years, and it was complicated. I had to manage the token. These are SAML tokens. I had to know all the standards. I had to implement the standard. This was lots of work. And now, it comes like that.
Sweet.
It is simple.
Simple
I gain
great.
Power. I gain new possibilities and new opportunities.
And more to the point, it was probably very, very hard to know the right way to do things.
Of course.
And you would do the wrong thing and leave a hole and you didn't know it.
It was complex. And now I gain all the power and the new opportunities in a very simple manner.
Excellent.
Because someone does the thing for me. The Windows Identity Framework is here to implement STS or to reference existing STS, to implement all the relevant standards concerning federation, claim-based identity, etc. So with Windows Identity Foundation, it's easy for me to implement claim-based identity in any web application, and of course in Azure web roles. So how do we do this? Visual Studio, after installing WIF, the WIF SDK, allows us to do add STS reference. I go to my web app and I do add STS reference. After doing so, I get here a wizard which asks me, where is the STS? Where is the metadata about the claims that you want to use, etc., etc. So I just point to the STS here in this wizard. Next, next, next. That's all I need to do. And this wizard would update my configuration and inserts all I need to have. And now I'm ready to go. I'm running, and I have claim-based identity in my web role. Do you want to see that?
I do.
Okay, so let's go and see that. So, I have a web role, a very simple web role. You'll see it just shows my name. That's no more than that. It's the same old classic first page of a web role that we saw earlier. But I have another project here, and that's an STS. And this STS was built using the Windows Identity Framework. I would not go into details. You would be able to download the code. But I can just tell you it is simple. It's less than 100 lines of code, maybe less than 50 lines of code. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. Few methods that you have to implement, and that's it.
Okay.
There's lots of help about that. And unfortunately, WIF is out of scope from that course.
Yes.
So we won't go into details about that. Now here I did add STF reference, and and I said, please, that's my app, and please, I want to use an existing STS, okay? And the metadata for that STS would be found here. I would go to Azure. Here it is. This is the STS. Here it is. That's the data, etc., etc. Okay. Should I want encryption? Do not want encryption. These are the claims I'm about to use, etc. I would do cancel now because I've done it already. Mm-hmm. I do not have to do that again. The result will be simple, would be a simple update in web.config, which we can see here. So, for instance, we get the Microsoft.identity model, mm-hmm. and it says which certificates will I use, where is the STS, etc., etc. Okay? Which claims do I want to use? Here they are. These are the claims, etc. So a very simple configuration update, and that's it. And now, when I run the application, again, I'm running against the local fabric. What would happen here that instead of just showing the web role immediately, I would be diverted, redirected mm-hmm. to the STS. Now, I'm using here just my own certificates,
yes,
so I'm being told, hey, these are not very signed certificates. I do not trust those, so that's okay with me. Okay?
Yeah, well, I don't trust yours either, so there.
Okay. And here, I am redirected back to my site.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I am in the STS now. The STS asked me, please authenticate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's okay. I submit. And now I am redirected back to the app. And that's the standard app we know. But here you can see those claims.
Yes.
That's my identity, that's my name,
yeah,
that's my role, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's very nice.
It is.
Okay? So this is just a very simple implementation of claim-based identity.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw simple wizards, simple steps.
Yes.
That's it. And I have claim-based identity using Windows Identity Framework in a web role. So with that, we will conclude our first session.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue in 10 minutes.